Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Welcome in to Early Odds 670, The Score, on a Saturday morning as usual, and had to get Isaac Trotter back on the program to start things because we are just a few weeks away from Selection Sunday and things are getting very interesting all across. We have a lot to talk about. Obviously, this past weekend we saw Auburn beat Alabama and then Alabama loses again during the week, so we got to talk about that. We got to talk about Wooden Award. So a lot of different things to hit with Isaac Trotter here in the open. Opening segment. In the next segment, too, going to talk to Ben Wittenstein, get some angles for NBA second half and the weekend, and then we'll close it, as we usually do, with your boy Solo Dolo, just to talk some college baseball and some MLB angles as that gets closer and closer as well. But as mentioned, Isaac Trotter, 24/7 Sports, at Isaac _ Trotter on Twitter. Welcome back. Always a pleasure. And we have a lot to get into as we approach Selection Sunday.
Yeah, it's a month to go, and I feel like this is the time where the good teams are going to start. Like, we have to be careful with them because it's like, how much motivation do they have in the last couple games of this season? But like at the same time, like a lot of guys are looking ahead to March Madness, and this is the time of year where you have to be playing your best basketball. And there's huge games on the slate today that'll have huge seed line implications moving forward.
I want to start, before we get into the games and some seeding jostling, I want to start with the Wooden Award, though, because we've seen a lot of movement. We have seen Jani Broom really close this gap in the odds. I mean, just 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, Cooper Flagg was minus 500 out to as short or as minus price as minus 800 in some places. And now that's come all the way back. We're sitting at minus 160, and Jani Broom's about even money, plus 105 for the Wooden Award. And when we talked to you in the summer and you had the Jani Broom Wooden Award bet, I know you're sitting on a really nice position there, but taking that out of it and taking your bias out of it, if you're looking at it just as an objective voter or an analyzer of the game and how this has gone, where do you see this standing right now as of today?
For me, I still think it's Flag, and I understand the line movement towards Broom with what he's done. Part of that is just because he got back from his injury a little bit quicker. But for me, I do think it is Flag. Analytically, Cooper Flag has a KenPom on his like player of the year rating is 2.7. That is on pace for like the third best individual season of the internet era. Better than Zach Edey's first player of the year, better than Zach Edey's second player of the year thing. Like, this is a historic type of season that Cooper Flagg is having. So, and that's not to take anything away from Jani Broom, because if you look at it, Jani Broom is having the third best, or like the fifth best analytical season since then. So we're having an all-time race between two complete studs. I'm fascinated to see how this goes down the stretch. I think some of the game, these big game moments, like that Carolina game that Flagg's going to have tonight against Illinois, that Flag will have on a national broadcast, those are like those big spots where if he has big games, I think he's going to finally put that final vice grip around it. But there is a case for Broom just because the SEC is so much better than the ACC. Auburn and Duke are, you know, hands down the best teams. But if Auburn could kind of navigate a tougher league, I think Jani could potentially have that final sway there. But for me, if the season ended today, it's Flag just because of the generational season he's having.
if nobody has any positions, would you recommend a bet anywhere? Like, do you think there's value? Like, you think it's flag and you think he can start to kind of constrict his position on this, on the lead here. Do you think there's value in minus 160? Do you think that should be more of a minus 250 or even longer minus price? Or how do you look at these prices?
Yeah, anything inside of minus 200, I'm looking at flag, because I just don't see many losses on this schedule for Duke. Like, there is an opportunity where they could finish out this campaign and they're 28-3 and 19-1 in the ACC at the end of the regular season. Say they blow through the ACC tournament. We're like, man, they're 31-3 with earning a number one overall seed, and Flag's having this generational type of season. Say he finishes number one in the player of the year on KenPom. I feel like it's him. And anytime, like, you can get a number inside of minus 200 at this point, I do think that would probably be my lean, just because I'm just trying to map out the path for Broome to win this. And it feels like Flag needs to twist an ankle and miss a game or two, or have like a kind of a rough game at a big spot. I just don't see that happening. He's been, you know, so consistent and so terrific on both ends of the floor all year long. Plus, it's Cooper Flag. Like, he's objectively fun, and I think like a lot of people, you know, voters especially, it's going to be hard for them to look at some of those KenPom player of the year rankings and be like, you know, I'm not going to give it to this kid who's just been, you know, even better than all the hype that he had coming into the season.
Well, let's start there. You mentioned it, Duke, Illinois later today, and there's a lot of different things on both sides to kind of pick apart here. Let's start with the Illinois side of this, because they've been the talking point, and especially obviously we're here, we're on 670 The Score, we're in Illinois, and people in Illinois can't, quote unquote, doing air quotes, but, you know, can't bet Illinois, but this team has been just flummoxing everybody, because a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, we thought this was a Final Four potentially team, and they showed that ceiling. And now things have just completely derailed for them over the course of the last month, month and a half. Now peaks seemingly with this matchup against Duke, neutral site at Madison Square Garden. What do you think for this team? And obviously, I know you have insight into what's going on in the Illinois locker room as far as health-wise, but, I mean, do you think this game could be close, or is this still just going to be Illinois continues to slide? And if they do, what is the long-term picture for Illinois as well?
Yeah, it's really nuanced, because I do think that the full strength version of this team is really talented and maybe the most talented team in the Big Ten. But we just haven't seen that version of this Illinois group in a long time. Tomislav Avisic has battled mono and multiple, you know, sicknesses. Merez Johnson, their stud freshman, is now out with a wrist injury. Kasperis Jakusonis has been banged up and missed a couple games. But I do think a lot of this team has kind of frayed because their transfers have not really, you know, played up to the level that we expected. Kylan Boswell has regressed. Trey White has fallen out of favor in that rotation. Benham Rickhouse has been extremely up and down. So as you kind of head into this game, this feels like a just let it loose game against Duke. You have nothing to lose. You're a double-digit underdog on a neutral floor to a team that is considered maybe the best team in college basketball who can win the national championship. And Illinois, like, is kind of embracing like this David versus Goliath thing, which is really fascinating, because on paper, Illinois like has as much talent as pretty much anybody. Like, Duke is going to go into this game with two lottery picks. Illinois has two lottery picks. And if you're going to, you know, just from a matchup perspective, if you're going to beat Duke, you have to play one-on-one basketball. They're a terrific switching defense. They switch everything. They're going to make you play one-on-one basketball. That kind of is what Illinois can be. When Kasperis Jakusonis and Will Riley are really tuned up and ready to go, that's the path. But if Illinois cannot rebound tonight, if they're not healthy enough, if Tomislav Avisic is still, you know, banged up, their 7-foot-1 center, and they can't rebound, I think Duke could feast on the defensive glass, win the rebounding margin by a lot, and they're just, their raw size and physicality is something that could give Illinois trouble. So long term, I do think that this Illinois group, I've changed my conceptions of them. I did think that this was a tier one national title contender in early January. Now I just don't see it, because we haven't seen the consistency from them. And it's odd, because Brad Underwood teams usually get better as the season progresses and usually get hot. This team has kind of gotten worse, and part of that is the injuries and sickness. Another reason is they just haven't played well. Tonight would be, you know, an opportunity for them to be like, all right, we're going to get healthy, and this is the best version of ourselves. And if Illinois wins tonight, some of those futures numbers, or even if they're competitive tonight, some of those futures numbers, I think, are going to change and start to kind of line back up with what we had with preseason expectations in January.
this can be a quick answer, and then we'll move on to the rest of the slate. But if Illinois keeps this close, let's say within double digits, let's say if this is an 8-point loss or less for Illinois, do you think people's opinions will start to change on Illinois? Like, okay, maybe they're turning a corner?
Yeah, if they get healthy, I do think that this team is a different conversation. Because when Kasperi Akisonis and Tomislav Avicic have been healthy, not sick, Illinois has one of the best net ratings in college basketball. It just is the truth. And that's that they are the most important players on the team, and they haven't had them at full strength for a minute, and they need both of them to play an elite level if Illinois wants any business of thinking about a second weekend run.
Let's stay in the Big Ten. And speaking of teams that get hot as the season goes on, Wisconsin is just on some kind of tear right now, and they have been unbelievable. Obviously, they take care of Illinois handily earlier this week, but now they face Oregon at home. This doesn't have to be about the game more so than it is about your big picture thoughts about Wisconsin. Have you mentioned that your perceptions of Illinois have changed? Have your perception of Wisconsin changed? Do you think this is a team that can make a run?
I do think this offense is legit. They have the ability to score in so many different ways. The five-shooter lineups are working. John Tanjay is playing like a first-team All-American. John Blackwell has had moments where I think he's the better player, though, which is really fascinating because Tanjay's getting all that All-American love. And they are a two-headed monster. Klesmet, we know, has been a complete stud. And you know, today's game against Oregon will be tough, too, because I do think this Oregon group does match up with them very well. Nate Biddle is a complete stud for Oregon, who I think is probably the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year pick for me right now if the season ended today. Seven-footer can step out and shoot threes. Jackson Shellstad has been terrific as well. And Oregon's point guard center combo is good enough to match up with anybody. And they got big wings that you need to go up against Wisconsin. So if that number, if I could get a number in the double digits against Oregon, against Wisconsin today, I would probably be on that. But you're right. The Badgers have certainly, you know, really exceeded expectations. And they have found something offensively. This is legitimately the biggest tweak of an offensive system that I've seen from any team in college basketball. They are almost, you know, they just don't look like anything like themselves from what they were a few years ago. So credit to Greg Gard for really, really changing and adapting and modernizing this offense.
Let's go to the SEC. I'm sure people have been waiting for us to get to this just because of the gauntlet that the SEC has become over the course of the season. I want to start with Alabama hosting Kentucky because we saw Alabama a week ago lose to Auburn, a game that was kind of back and forth. Maybe the box score doesn't imply it was as close as it actually was if you were watching it. Then they drop one to Mizzou as well, and Mizzou takes care of them. Now they host Kentucky. What do you think about Alabama going forward? Is this just a tough stretch and they're maybe wearing down? And, you know, 3 games in a week, it's especially in the SEC, is a tough stretch. How do you view Alabama and Nate Oates' squad going forward and in this game against Kentucky?
Yeah, I mean, they lose to Auburn, who I think is, you know, a tier one national title contender, and they lose to Mizzou on the road, who I think is a tier one national title contender. So, like, that's just kind of life in the SEC right now. So none of those losses are going to look bad on Selection Sunday. You know, there are some concerns with this Alabama group. Their best two players, Mark Sears and Grant Nelson, have been a bit turnover prone. That just can't happen, and they need more from their stars if they want to go far. But I still think this team is a really tough cover. I don't think that they are in that Big Four, though. Like, I think for me, a Big Four has really emerged of it's Auburn, it's Duke, it's Florida, and I just feel like, and Houston I would put in there. And I don't think Alabama is quite in that upper echelon of elite teams. I think they would probably be in my tier two of national championship contenders. But today against Kentucky, you know, I think they match up great with Kentucky. Kentucky's still very banged up. Lamont Butler's been iffy. Jackson Robinson is iffy. We'll see if those guys can go today. If they're shorthanded, I think Alabama can roll them just because they match up with them so well at every single spot. But long term, I do have some concerns about this Alabama group. I just don't think they quite have solved enough of their issues, whether that's rim protection and with their best players just haven't been good enough this season. Mark Sears started to find himself a little bit with 35 against Mizzou. They need that version of him moving forward if they want to go on a long, sustained run.
Speaking of your Tier 1 title contenders, Houston does host Iowa State. I know that you have gone to a couple of these Iowa State games and you've seen them in person. Top 10 matchup, Houston hosting Iowa State. What do you think about this game just in and of itself in a vacuum?
Should be a great game. You know, for me, Iowa State, when I went and watched them play, I kind of left going, I just don't know if they're talented enough. And I still have some of those thoughts that creep into the back of my head sometimes. But to be honest, Milan Momcilovic has come back from an injury and it's really given them a nice little boost. It's just another double-digit score that they certainly need. But they got to get Keyshawn Gilbert going. He has really struggled as of late. And there were times where he was like their All-American candidate. He had just 5 points against Colorado, just 8 against Cincinnati, 8 against TCU a couple weeks ago. He just hasn't really found that groove lately. So this is an Iowa State offense that they could really get it going in transition. Houston does a terrific job of limiting transition buckets. So I think this is going to be a knock them out, drag them out fight. And for me, I think the underrated part about this Houston club is they lost Jamal Shedd and their backcourt has gotten better. And that's a really, really interesting thing with that group. And I love Milos Uzan. I think LJ Cryer is a stud. Emmanuel Sharp is finally starting to get healthy. They're deep. Milik Wilson and Terrence Arsenault are getting it going. Like, this Houston team has a real identity, and that backcourt can ball. And they're all shooting over 40% from three, too. So Houston's done a great job of, like, melding, like, hey, we're big and tough and strong and physical defensively. Oh, and we can drill threes. And that's kind of like the secret sauce for Houston this year.
I think there's going to be people who are parachuting in now that NFL is over and we just had the NBA All-Star break. So there's going to be people now that March is basically here are going to be parachuting in, looking at the rankings, looking to make bets, and they're going to hear you talk about Houston. They're going to say, oh, well, it's just Houston. They're going to get to the tournament and they're going to forget how to score. Just, and I know you don't feel that way. I know we don't feel that. We've watched this team. Just explain to the listeners and viewers, and you mentioned a little bit that this team can drill threes, just how this team is different from previous iterations of Houston that we've seen even in the last 5 years.
No, it's a great point. And the reason why they're different is they're finally healthy. The last few years, they've had some really egregious injuries in March that have hurt them big time. And just, you know, if you're tuning in March and seeing Houston, you're like, how did this team get a number one seed? Like, they just don't look that talented. This team is a lot more talented. Milos Uzan is a transfer point guard in from Oklahoma, who I think is maybe one of the most talented guards that Houston's ever had in their scheme. He can hit those mid-range tough shots. And they've done a great job, too, of weaponizing what they're good at. They go and recruit 6'8" guys that have 7'5" wingspans, and they're just like freak show athletes, and they're terrific at taking away shots at the rim. And if you're kind of parachuting into March right now, I would look for teams that can really protect the rim, turn teams over, and also, you know, are great on the glass and can shoot. And like that, Houston just checks off so many of those boxes for me. So they can win the shot volume game. They're going to take 10 more shots a game than you. They win the shot chart game now more than ever. They're taking better shots than you, and they have a lot more talent. So this team has really, you know, I've really turned on them. And you look at their overall record, like they are 22-4 entering today. Three of their four losses have been in overtime. Like, they are not that far away from being, like, undefeated this season. And then the other loss they had was to Auburn on a neutral floor where they had a lead in the final 2 minutes. It's just, this team is very, very close to having a perfect record right now.
I want to go to one more game today that starts in just a couple of hours, and then I want to hit you on a Sunday game as well. But to end the slate for Saturday, Tennessee, A&M, I think a couple of teams that people are really cooling on both individually. Kind of we're seeing what these teams really are. But just as far as the game itself, I think you don't really consider either of these teams true national title contenders. But for the game itself, A&M hosting Tennessee, top 10 matchup, people are going to be interested. Do you have any angles on this one?
Would you like to watch football on a basketball court? Because that is what this type of game is. They are very physical, and they will hit you. The battle on the glass is going to be enormous. I'm out on Texas A&M. I think a lot of people are going to look at them as like a top 10 team. I have valued them a lot differently further down the board. I just don't think this team can score well enough, and they have to play ugly. And that's just not a recipe that works. For me in this game, I'm going with the team that can shoot it better. And Tennessee has that in Chaz Lanier. And I think Zakai Ziegler is starting to find his groove as a shooter. He's a guy that they think could shoot upwards of 40% this year. He's only shot around 32, 33% this season. I think that's some positive regression is coming in that regard. So I'll take the team that could shoot and matches that physicality. Give me the balls.
Let's talk about tomorrow. St. John's hosting UConn. St. John's is the hot, trendy team. Credit to you. You said St. John's a long time ago. You said that they were a team to watch. You said that they were a Final Four contender. So that's why you should be listening to this show every week, because Isaac Trotter's been talking about St. John's for a long time. But now they host UConn, and UConn started, like, it feels like they're always right there. They're ready to put it together, and then they lose to a Seton Hall. So what do you make of this game? What do you make of each of these teams individually? And are we still a big St. John show here?
Yeah, we are riding with the Johnnies. You know, Rick Pitino, Slick Rick, I got to give him credit. He has been lying about injuries for the last couple of weeks, which has been hilarious. He was like, Davon Smith, our point guard, I don't know, he might miss the rest of the season. He magically plays the next game. Heading into this one, he's saying RJ Lewis, their All-American type of wing, is like, oh, no, he's probably not going to play this weekend. I would be surprised if RJ Lewis does not play against UConn. This game is going to be revved up and ready to go. For me, for UConn, they just don't look like a Dan Hurley team. They do not guard the basketball well enough, and they do not protect the rim well enough. Teams are constantly able to drive the basketball to the front of the rim and get fouled or get shots at the rim. That is not a good recipe against a very physical and very athletic St. John's team. Kadari Richmond, RJ Lewis, Davon Smith, all those guys are big, strong, physical guards that can get up into you. And we've seen a trend this year of UConn really struggling against pressure defenses. No defense in college basketball is more switchable than St. John's, and no defense in college basketball plays harder than St. John's. So I like St. John's again. I think that they just give, stylistically, they give UConn so many issues.
And with that, as we close the segment, Isaac, I have to ask you the same question I do every time. What's your Final Four right now?
So I'm really buying what Florida is selling. So I will put them in there. I think that they have a great mix. I will give you Auburn and Duke. Those are two teams that I've just continued to be high on. And, you know, I'm just going to keep riding like with the teams that got me here in the beginning. And that is St. John's or Michigan. Both of those two teams, I think, have the upside in very different ways to make a deep run. But give me Michigan. I think there's a way for them. Like, they've been winning without even playing all that well. When the light flickers on for Danny Wolf and Vlad Golden and Dusty May and that crew, they create so many more problems for other teams. So give me Michigan to make a deep, deep run.
Isaac Trotter, 24/7 Sports, at Isaac _Trotter on Twitter. You know him. You love him. Appreciate it, buddy. You're the best.
Thanks for having me.
This is 670 The Score. This is Early Odds. Jake Hassan, we are going to hit a quick break on the other side. Ben Wittenstein to break down NBA second half and what to bet in the second half of the season. So stick around. We'll be right back. Early Odds, 670 The Score starts again in just a couple minutes.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Welcome back in 670 The Score, Early Odds. Jake Hassan here with you, and very special guest. We have a debut for the first time in a while. We've been rehashing the same old faces and voices that you know, and this guy does come via a review, a recommendation of one of our favorites, of Colby Marcio, and he's obviously an insane person, so we're going to go a little more flatline, I think, at least. Ben Wittenstein of the Early Edge, CBS Sportsline joins the show. Ben, appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on. Excited to talk some NBA. I unfortunately or fortunately won't be as loud as Colby is, but I'll try my best to be as entertaining.
Well, you know, different strokes for different folks, as they say, but nonetheless, appreciate the time, man. And obviously, after the earlier news this week, earlier in the week, Victor Wembanyama out for the season. He was the heavy favorite for Defensive Player of the Year, -2500 in some places, and was eating up a ton of the win probability. This is basically a done deal now. Out for the season, blood clot in his shoulder, and this market is wide open. And I think a lot of people think that Evan Mobley is the next guy up. He became the immediate minus price, about -110. But what are your thoughts, at least for this award? And then we'll break it out into a couple other topics. But starting with Defensive Player of the Year after the Wemby news, what do you make of this award market, Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, it's very interesting because the Wemby news really affects a multitude of different things. The Defensive Player of the Year market is one of them, and then where the Spurs finish in the standings too. They were kind of making a run at that 10 seed and then trying to get into the play-in tournament, and now, you know, maybe we see the Spurs as a lottery team once again, and they're going to be restocking and even adding to the talent that they have to next season. So I think that's very fascinating, and hopefully Wemby gets better and he's good to play for next season as well. But it's interesting for this market because you see Jaren Jackson. A lot of people are like, oh, this is Jaren Jackson's award to lose now at this point. But if you look at the way the Grizzlies have played over the last 5 to 10 games, defensively, it's a little rough. And I think when you look at a team like the Cavaliers, and a lot of people talk about Evan Mobley, he's plus money at some places, so that's really good value. And the Cavs have arguably the best defense in the NBA. Those defensive efficiency numbers have always been really good this season. They're a very tough team to score against. I mean, they just held the Nets to under 100 points. It's, for any team in the NBA, it's tough to do. So to me, I think Evan Mobley has to be my pick at this point. It's tough to not give probably the best defensive player on the best defensive team the awarded defensive player of the year. I know Jaren Jackson is the big shot-blocking guy, and everyone talks about how good he is defensively, but if the Grizzlies are going to continue to slide defensively, might be Evan Mobley's to win.
I think a lot of people are going to go to this market, and they're going to look at the odds, and they're going to see a big price on Rudy Gobert, and they're going to go, whoa, because he's won this award a ton. This was basically the Rudy Gobert Award for the better part of the last 5-6 years. What do you make of his price? It's 50-1 at some places, a very long price. Is this just fatigue? Is this just people don't really like Rudy Gobert? Are they Team Draymond? Like, what do you make of this Rudy Gobert and people who are going to look at this number and say, whoa, like, that's a huge number for a guy that's won this award a ton?
It's all the above. It has to be. I mean, I'm in the not Rudy Gobert fan camp, so I enjoy, you know, ragging on him, making fun of him, doing whatever it is, just because he's fun to do that. He's an easy target. But I do think it's some fatigue too. It's like Rudy Gobert, defensive player of the year again. Okay, blah. You know, it's just boring at this point. Everyone knows he's a very good defender, and I think the Timberwolves struggles recently, and you've had, you know, coaches call not specifically him out, but the team out in general. He's part of the team. So I think that gets into people's mindset a little bit too. There's probably just a little too much noise surrounding the struggles of the Timberwolves, some defensive issues with that team, them not really playing up to how people expected them to play. And then you add on the voter fatigue, you add on the fact that people just don't like the guy personally, almost, that it's hard for him, I think, to literally beat those odds. So I think it's time for fresh blood. I think people want some fresh blood, and you have teams playing really good defense, and you have good anchors for those good defensive teams. So I think that's where more people are going to start to look rather than just kind of rehash Rudy Gobert.
I want to ask you one more question, Ben, about defensive player there, because I think there's one more angle that people are going to look at. You mentioned likability factor, and these are voters. There's a human element to this a little bit, and a team that everybody really likes, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and SGA is a huge minus price. He's probably going to be your MVP, barring something insane happening, like with what happened with Wemby. But people, I think, are going to look at Lu Dort, and, you know, the Dortcher Chamber, and he's a little bit further down the board. He's 7, 8, 9 to 1. Is there any avenue for him? And obviously, this is mostly a big man award, and Lu Dort he's a guard. So what do you think of the Dortcher Chamber maybe having a shot at this? And he has at least a team that's likable and a team that's very popular.
Yeah, and I would say in terms of value, he's probably a better pick than even Rudy Gobert, because, again, I think the thing that helps him out is the Thunder, again, very good defensive team, if not one of the better defensive teams. It's like them and the Cavs are up there 1 and 2. And as long as the Thunder continue to be top in the West, it's hard to not just look at their team in general and be like, all right, what are the big reasons why? Obviously, SGA, and for sure offensively, SGA is a big reason why. That might be why he wins MVP. But then you have guys like Lu Dort who just make it so hard to do anything defensively or offensively against the Thunder, especially without Chet Holmgren. He's been out for a long time. He's just coming back. That team still survived without him, and defensively they were still good. And a big reason of that was because of guys like Lu Dort, Jalen Williams too being one of them. So I think you look at some guy like him, and if he's going to be on the best team in the NBA, record-wise, the best team in the NBA, defensively, and it's a big surprise team, it's a group of young guys, they're fun, the vibes are high, you might get some people voting for him just because, hey, we want to change. We know Mobley's good defensively, and we know the Cavs are good defensively. Maybe that's more of a team thing than anything else. Grizzlies may be falling off a defensive cliff. Maybe you get a guy like Lu Dort sneaking in there, being on one of the more exciting and possibly the best team in the league.
Talking to Ben Wittenstein at Ben Wittenstein on Twitter, just his name. You can find him CBS Sports. You can find him elsewhere on Twitter as well, Sportsline and The Early Edge. Ben, it's enough about Defense Player of the Year. Awesome stuff, obviously, but let's talk about the Spurs as a whole now. And first game after the Wemby news comes down, and Thursday night, they just kick the crap out of the Suns. And maybe that's more of a Suns thing, but what do you make of the Spurs as a whole now in general? Do you just think about playing De'Aaron Fox overs just game to game, or how do you view them going forward for the last, you know, 30 games of the season or so?
Yeah, and the thing that kind of stinks about this is that you have Wemby and Fox, and people thought, all right, we're going to get 20 or so games to see how they play together and see what they do well together. And we're just not going to get that anymore. So the interesting thing is, where do the Spurs go from here? Are they going to be a team that maybe just is like, all right, we're going to try to get another draft pick. We're going to try to make the lottery. I think they can get like the 9 or 10th pick kind of a thing. They could probably fall that far. So maybe they take that route and they're like, let's just stock up on more lottery talent, see what we can do next season. But they have a lot of really good guys too. I mean, Castle, look at him. Look at how well he's doing. Rookie of the year kind of guy. Like, he's been great. Sochan's great. So, like, you have a lot of really good pieces on that team that now, maybe with Wemby out, they get a little more time. They get a little more movement. They get a little more impact in the offensive play. So I think this is almost like a place where you see them evaluate a lot of their talent. And we'll see in the last 20 games. We'll see how Fox works with some of the young guys. They got to figure out shooting. You know, maybe they go after a good shooting player in the draft. But for now, this is evaluation time, I think, for them. I don't think they're looking to make the play-in game. I don't think they need to make the play-in game. It might even be better for them to get a lottery pick in the draft and get some more talent. So it completely changes the way they're going to be thinking about things for the rest of the season and into next season with this Wemby injury. So I think it's very fascinating that they have to do like a complete 180 after doing another 180 with trading for De'Aaron Fox. So it's a lot of movement for the Spurs team recently.
You bring up Stephen Castle, and I want to come back around to that because he's your leader, your favorite right now for Rookie of the Year. And it's about minus 190, varying prices a little bit there, but generally about minus 190. And do you think that that maybe is some value? Because, you know, we don't advocate for betting huge minus prices, but do you think that should be even more of a minus price considering his usage is probably going to go up now and the Spurs are going to see what they have in him? Do you think that this is a number that's subject to get into that minus 250, minus 300 range in the next week or two?
Yeah, I mean, anything under minus 200, I think, is pretty solid because, like you said, and the thing with Rookie of the Year, unlike MVP, where it's like MVP almost needs to be on one of the best, if not the best team in the league, Rookie of the Year is really just the guy that almost gets the most minutes. And if you're getting a lot of minutes and you're scoring a lot, you have a really good chance to win Rookie of the Year. And with this Wemby injury, you're going to see a guy like Castle, who is already in the running to be one of the top rookies of the season. He's just going to get so much more usage. He's going to try to play well with Fox and see how that dynamic works. I think because they're going to be trying to test that a lot, we'll probably see Castle in a lot of big moments in Spurs games. We're going to see him get a lot of minutes in general, a lot of usage. A guy like that, it's hard not to bet to win Rookie of the Year just because of the plain minutes and opportunities he's now going to have without the best player on his team being out.
I want to stick in the West because, let's be honest, the West is far more compelling than the East. And I think we all know how the East is going to end, and we'll see the Celtics in the finals. But I want to ask you about the Nuggets because they're a team that's gotten hot. Now they're making that charge up the standings, making that charge for the 2 seed, it seems like. And they're playing way better. And we're kind of seeing the resurgence of Jamal Murray a little bit, closer to that bubble Murray that we saw from a few seasons ago. What do you make of the Nuggets? Are we getting some value on them right now? Because people kind of seemingly written them off, and now they're playing really well again. Are we getting some value with the Nuggets here, and should we be betting on them as far as game to game and even as far as futures go as well?
Yeah, it's about time for Jamal Murray, honestly. That first half of the season, that was rough. You had a lot of people being like, is he just cooked? And luckily, I don't think Jamal Murray is cooked, and I don't think the Nuggets are cooked. I think you could have said, you know, December, January rolling around, I love the Nuggets as much as anyone else. The Bulls are my favorite team, but the Nuggets are like my baby since the Bulls just don't like winning. So I love the Nuggets. I've loved betting on the Nuggets. I think the team dynamic is very fascinating. Bringing in Russell Westbrook, I wasn't a huge fan of that, but he has now worked out. His impact on some of these lineups, you look at the net rating and the plus minus, he's in a lot of the lineups that have a very high net rating, a lot of good plus minus numbers. So he's made a very positive impact. Jokic has really come alive. He's, you know, the guy that a lot of people are talking as not a dark horse MVP, but, you know, he's second in the MVP numbers behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I think it just took half a season or so for this Nuggets team to finally get it together. I don't know why. They have played a lot of postseason basketball in the last couple of years. Maybe there's just a little bit of a hangover from that and really trying to get back into the swing of things. Jamal Murray kind of being in a slump wasn't helpful for that. But it does seem like, over the last couple games, 10 games or so, this is one of the best teams in the NBA. So if the Nuggets can be like that Nuggets team of old where everyone stays healthy, Gordon's back to being healthy, Michael Porter Jr. is hitting his three-point shots, Jokic is doing Jokic things, this is going to be a dangerous team. And everyone's been talking about the Thunder. Everyone's talking about the Celtics. A lot of people talking about the Cavs. The Nuggets might kind of sneak their way in there, a little backdoor cover type of thing where they come in and surprise everyone in the playoffs and make a run for the finals. Because when they are playing at their best, Jake, I mean, they're one of the best teams, if not one of the best team in the NBA, just because they have probably the best player on the planet in Jokic when he's playing at his best. And they have a lot of wide-ranging guys who are long, athletic. They're a tough team to beat when they're playing at their best. And now, finally, with things coming into form, it might be a good little dark horse bet.
It's insane to say dark horse bet for a team that has, like you said, probably the best player in the world. Talking to Bet Wittenstein, producer at The Early Edge, CBS Sports, Sportsline. Can find him on Twitter, add his name, at Ben Wittenstein. Ben, we've made it about 12, 13 minutes into this so far, and I haven't brought it up, so we have to talk about it. Let's talk about the Lakers. Let's talk about LeBron. Let's talk about Luka. LeBron drops 40 against the Trailblazers on Thursday night. Looks good. Luka doesn't play in that game, and he's clearly still shaking off some rust. But what do you make of the Lakers? They're probably going to be pretty firmly in the playoff picture, barring some kind of disaster. But what is your take on the Lakers? How do you view them? Game to game, are you betting them? Are you doing anything with them in the futures? Just your overall thoughts on the Los Angeles Lakers in this new era.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, even right before I started doing this, I was looking at the strength of schedule, the remaining strength of schedule for these teams. The Lakers, according to the strength of schedule website, have the hardest strength of schedule remaining. So I think that's going to be very interesting for them. They should make the playoffs. And I think their goal is to avoid that playing game, because everything can go wrong in playing games. You just don't want to be in that scenario. So they're probably trying for the sixth or fifth spot. As long as Luka can get healthy, he's going to need some time to work with LeBron, although it kind of looks like he has chemistry with LeBron anyways, making those like full court passes to LeBron. I think they are going to need some help down low. Of course, they try to get Mark Williams, and that whole issue with, you know, the physical and denying him and everything, I think that might come back to haunt them, because they're going to need some rim protection. They're going to need some rebounding. So that might be an issue down the stretch. But man, LeBron looks good. And I know people were talking about missing the All-Star game and him just bowing out the last second. If it's going to help him stay healthy for a playoff run, it's probably the smart decision for him. And you add Luka to the mix. This is a team that I think has the potential to play like a one or two seed in the Western Conference. But things can go wrong. You know, if Luka's missing shots, if he has off nights, if he doesn't become fully healthy, this could be a first round and out kind of a team. But it really comes down to LeBron, as it always does. If LeBron is playing at normal LeBron levels, which is like 30-year-old LeBron for the past 10 years, the Lakers should be all right, and Luka's can do his thing. He's going to have some pressure taken off him. I think the Lakers are poised, as long as everyone's as healthy and everyone is good to go, for a pretty decent playoff run. But again, everything can go wrong so fast, because it is the Lakers. Shooting can be poor. Rebounding can be bad. They can be bad defensively. Like you saw the Hornets like really target Luka Doncic defensively, which is an issue for sure. And maybe he gets healthier. Maybe he becomes a better defender. But that's some issues I foresee. But other than that, they have probably two of the best players on the planet right now. Hard to bet against that.
Let's hit the East for a little bit before we let you get out of here, Ben. It's worth talking about, I think, a little bit. And we joked about it. It's probably just going to be the Celtics, and they're going to hit that switch, and then they're just going to steamroll everybody, and they'll start caring. But a lot of people want to talk about the Cavaliers. A lot of people want to talk about the Knicks. Those are the fun teams. I think people kind of liked the Bucks a little bit before this Porter suspension, and now feels like that's hanging on by a thread. Shocker, Kyle Kuzma isn't really saving your season. But this Celtics team, they're minus 105 to be the Eastern Conference champs. They're the favorite for the title, or co-favorite with the Thunder. But do you think anybody has a chance of making a run to the Celtics? Can the Knicks or the Cavs catch them for a series on an off night and maybe steal a series away? Or is this just going to be what we saw last year, and we get to the playoffs, Celtics lock in, and they just kind of steamroll everybody to the finals?
God, I hope someone can knock the Celtics off the perch. I hope and pray every day that some team like the Cavs or some team like the Knicks can be able to do it, because, I mean, obviously being from Chicago, I've never been a big Boston Celtics fan, but then, you know, you see the way they play, and it's just the least fun basketball to watch, just jacking up all those threes. So even if the Knicks do something, even if the Cavs do something, the Cavs are such a fun team. I think a lot of these teams are capable of knocking off the Celtics. Now, I don't know if Boston's been kind of coasting through this season and just kind of going through the motions, because even going through the motions, they're a really good team and they're just kind of waiting to turn it on for the playoffs. But we've seen the Cavs be able to beat the Celtics. They beat them once this season so far. The Knicks, I don't fully trust Tom Thibodeau teams in the playoffs just because he loves to run those guys ragged. But even teams like the Pacers, who are more, have been a second half team in the past couple of years, so maybe we see them kind of figure things out. It's tough. They're definitely, the Celtics are the top dog right now in the East, and I do think there's some guys below, like the Cavs and the Knicks and maybe even the Pacers, that can give them some trouble. But they're a team that just plays so well that you need to have your best game. And you need to have your best game 4 out of 7 games, which is very tough against the Celtics. So The odds are not great. They're not in the favor of any team but the Celtics. So I would just love for them to have like a couple off shooting nights. The Knicks maybe take advantage defensively. Brunson hits some clutch shots. Or you see the Cavs just really lock down on the three-point line defensively and stops them. So I would love for that to happen. I don't think the odds are very high, but I do think there could be some ways to get to the Celtics like we've seen the Cavs do.
Ben Wittenstein, at his name, Ben Wittenstein, with two T's on Twitter. Find him, The Early Edge, CBS Sports, and Sportsline. Ben, appreciate it, man. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This is 670 The Score. This is Early Odds. Jake Hassan, we close the show on the other side. I have a ton of college baseball to get into, so we'll do that on the other side. Stick around. Early Odds will be right back in just a couple minutes. Welcome back in. Final segment of Early Odds. Closing the show here on 670 The Score. Jake Hassan with you as always. Shout out to Isaac Trotter and Ben Wittenstein for coming on the show today. Talked some college hoops with Isaac to open the show. Gave us his thoughts on what the bracket's shaping up to look like, the slate tonight, and just spinning things forward. And of course, I had to ask him what his Final Four was, because I do that every time and it's fun. And he's still very high on St. John's. Spoiler. But if you missed that, go back and listen to the podcast, of course. And shout out to Ben Wittenstein making his Early Odds debut. Ben, we will definitely have him back as well. Some really, really good stuff on the NBA. His thoughts about Defensive Player of the Year following the Victor Wembanyama injury and him being out for the season. Gave us some thoughts on Rookie of the Year and as well as the overall futures market in the NBA. So shout out to Ben. He was awesome. Can also find that in the podcast if you missed it. But you know how we do. Final segment here. It's just me. Close out the show and give you some thoughts on my bets, what I'm looking at this weekend, and I'd be remiss if I didn't give you some college baseball because we are into it. It is the second weekend. We are underway. A lot of really good games on Friday, which were awesome, and things starting to take shape and starting to form some opinions already about some of these teams. And I just want to say off the rip, shout out to Michigan. Played really, really well. They have been playing really well. They were not a team that I was looking at, but after they upset Virginia in the first weekend, last weekend on a walk-off, I started paying attention. And I think that this team has the makings of a team that'll be a bet on going forward. And obviously they played TCU yesterday in a big game, a big barometer test for them, and I'm going to be betting them today and tomorrow as well to close out the weekend. I'm just going to play them whenever they're dogs. If I'm going to get plus money on Michigan going forward, at least for the foreseeable future, I'm just going to take it. I think this team is scrappy. I think they're talented. I think they are well-rounded, and I think they can win some games and have some upsets, and they make it to the tournament, maybe win a region. So I like Michigan. They're going to be a play on for me going forward. Another team that I kind of had circled but surprised me in the first weekend, Ole Miss, a team that won the College World Series a couple of years ago, and they got a big contribution from their starting pitcher, Hunter Elliott, who returned to the mound for the first time in 2 years. He had been recovering from Tommy John and other elbow and shoulder issues, and he had been on the bench. He had been, you know, injured for the last couple of years, and he made his return against an Arizona team that people were high on, and he pitched very well. And if he's going to, and he was a member of that Ole Miss team that won the College World Series just a couple of years ago, and if he's going to be consistent and he's going to look like this, I'm very high on Ole Miss. I think their lineup has a lot of potential. I think they could absolutely run through. And they're an SEC team, and these SEC teams are very good. It's why you see most of them near the top of the odds board to win the College World Series. So very high on Ole Miss and Michigan going forward. I still maintain my positions on Arizona State, especially after Arizona stumbled in the first weekend and they look very vulnerable. TCU now, yesterday's result against Michigan notwithstanding, TCU lost their ace and he's going to be out for the entire year. Their Friday night starter, Ben Abelt, he's out for the year with Tommy John, an elbow injury. He's not going to be on the mound for the rest of the year, and that's huge for TCU. He was their Friday night ace, their guy, their nails, their best pitcher, arguably their best player, and a reason why people were so high on this TCU team. I think things could fall apart here for them. So, and Oklahoma State, I mean, I just don't think this team has it. They have a couple of really good players led by Nolan Schobert, but I don't think they have it on the mound. I think that Oklahoma State is very vulnerable. They stumbled in the first weekend. I really still like Arizona State to win the Big 12, and you can still get that as I filibuster for a second to find that in just a minute. Conference winner. Scroll up. This is really good radio that's happening right now. Apologies for that, and I just accidentally clicked the American Athletic Conference. I'm dumb. That's my bad. Big 12, here we go. You can still get Arizona State at 5-1. Still think that's a ton of value for them. TCU still listed ahead of them. Oklahoma State still shorter than 3-1. Think that's wrong. Arizona State really impressed me in the opening weekend. I think they have a ton of talent, can put up a ton of runs. So really like Arizona State going forward here. I will also be betting a team that's going to be a bet on for me. I think this UConn team is underrated, and I don't mind laying minus 130 or minus 140 with them. If you want to pair it with like a Clemson or a Vanderbilt or an LSU or some kind of other heavy favorite, I'm totally fine with that, and you want to get some plus money. But even straight, I think this UConn team should be lined closer to like minus 200 in some of these games. I mean, like even Friday night, UConn, they were lined at minus 140. I guess it was Friday afternoon, but UConn against Florida Atlantic was minus 130. And I just don't agree with that. I think this UConn team, they stumbled a little bit in the first weekend. They lost to Stetson, but Stetson, I think, also might be better than people are giving them credit for. So I think this UConn team is going to be plucky as well. And then last one here on college baseball teams, and then I'll give you a couple MLB thoughts as well. Stanford, man. Stanford, I like taking them as a long shot outright. I like taking a little bit of a shot on them to make the College World Series as well. You can find an 80-1 on Stanford. And for context, there's a 50 out there on them to win the College World Series. So like shop around, there's some discrepancies and some variance in prices there, but Stanford wouldn't hate a flyer on them at 80-1. They are 10-1 to make the College World Series, and that's a team that has been a 2 seed in the tournament the last couple of years. So, and they could probably host a region as well, maybe even a super if things break correctly for them. And they're led by Rintaro Sasaki, a freshman who came over from Japan, shattered Shohei Ohtani's high school records in Japan, and said, "Nope, I'm going to come over to American colleges. I'm going to play American college ball." And he's been awesome. Stanford's been really good. They've really impressed me. And so I like a little bit of a flyer on them at 10-1 to make the College World Series. Think that price should probably be cut in half, honestly. So 10-1, like that for the Cardinal. And let's close here with some Major League Baseball, because spring training games are here. They've started, and I think there's a lot of really fun ways to obviously look at awards, look at futures, and a couple of guys. I'll give you one long shot from each league. Almost said conference. That would have been weird. One league long shot prices for Cy Young that I've been looking at. I'll start with Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies. 50-1 out there on him, and the biggest problem with Christopher Sanchez was his fastball. It's just not very good. It grades out very poorly, and he got away with it. He had a decent year last year. His first half was much better than his second half, and part of that was, you know, first full season as a starter started to get, you know, the wear and tear caught up to him. But now, as he gets deeper into his career, I think the body will be more used to that. But all of his other pitches grade out elite. Like, you go to his Baseball Savant page, elite pitches, his breaking stuff, his off-speed stuff, his extension, it's all really good. It's just his fastball was very, very poor. But now, allegedly, he's experimenting with some kind of new fastball, more of a cutter is what I've been reading and what I've been seeing. So if that goes well, and he can rely on this cutter and ditch the fastball more, and he can have that extra kind of pitch with some run to attack hitters, I think Christopher Sanchez is going to be a good bet at 50-1, and he could be in this conversation at the very least come June, July, if not earlier. And I know people are going to look at the Phillies rotation and say, well, he's in the same rotation as Zach Wheeler. Yeah, Zach Wheeler is always the bridesmaid. Zach Wheeler, for the better part of the last decade, has been in this race, and he always finishes second or third. It's just, he just doesn't get it across the finish line. He's not there. So Zach Wheeler, I'm fine going against him. Aaron Nola, too erratic. Ranger Suarez, just don't think he has the pure stuff. So I think Christopher Sanchez, that's why you get this longer price, because he's behind those guys. And so he can kind of sit back and you bet these 50s and 40s and 30s because he doesn't get the shine. But I think that's going to change very quickly here. And then another one in the American League, 80-1. Toronto Blue Jays starter Bowden Francis, and probably don't know him because he didn't pitch a ton. He only pitched in 27 games last year, only 13 of them starts, only threw 103 innings. But he was very, very effective as a reliever for the Blue Jays. They needed starters. They said, hey, we're going to transition you into a starter. You're going to start games for us, as that's what a starter famously does. And he was great. He almost threw two no-hitters early on as he became a starter. And granted, one of those was against the Angels, so you know, do with that what you will. But everything grades out awesome for him. His fastball grades out very, very well. His off-speed stuff grades out very, very well. All of his peripherals look pretty good. He doesn't walk anybody. He doesn't strike a ton of guys out. That's really not, like, the one knock against him. But if he can evolve and continue to fine-tune some things as a starter, I really like Bowden Francis at a big, big number at 80-1 to be in the running, at least, for AL Cy Young. And I think he has a ton of potential now in his first full year as a starter for the Blue Jays. I think he's their best starter. And Gausman and Berrios are going to get the shine and they're going to get the talk. But Gausman, I think, is washed. Berrios is too erratic. I just think he's aggressively mediocre. I think Francis could be the ace of that staff, and at 80-1, getting a really, really good price on him as well. But that does it for this edition of Early Odds. I have been Jake Hassan. Thank you once again to Isaac Trotter and Ben Wittenstein for coming on to talk college basketball and NBA. Appreciate their time. Appreciate the boys in the back for putting the show on the air, as always. And appreciate you, the listener, as always, for coming around each and every week and listening to the show and making sure that I can still afford food and rent. So appreciate that. That's really awesome. Really helps my quality of life. But we'll be back next week. Going to talk more NBA, more college basketball. We'll get some NHL in there as well, as the Four Nations is over and USA womp. But we'll get into the second half of the NHL as well. So we will see you next week. For myself, for the boys in the back, thank you as always to the listener. Thank you once again to Isaac Trotter and Ben Wittenstein. We will see you next week. Boys, hit the music.